And welcome back, everyone, to another edition of Sports from the Six, our sixth episode. Ali Khan Rivjani, Flip Livingstone, and Dwayne Turner. Pleased to be joined now by the host of Sportsnet's Blue Jay Central, Jamie Campbell. Jamie, thank you so much for doing this.
My pleasure.
Let's get started talking a little bit of AL East baseball. We talked about this earlier off-air. The AL East has really weakened this year in comparison to past years. It's taken a toll towards the younger side. Where do you see that division shaping up as we head into the season?
It's going to be fascinating to watch the developments over 162 games. The Orioles essentially ran away with it last year, but they've lost some critical players, Nick Markakis being one of them. Nelson Cruz signed as a free agent with Seattle. They don't have Andrew Miller in their bullpen anymore, so I don't think they're as strong as they once were. I see it as a division that does not have an ace on any of the staffs. The Red Sox have made massive changes, and sometimes, as the Blue Jays found out 2 years ago, when you make wholesale changes like that, it can affect the way players perform in their initial year with a new organization. So I am truly excited about this, despite the fact that the Blue Jays lost Marcus Stroman about 3 weeks ago. I still think they have a legitimate shot, as legitimate as pretty well anybody in the division, at actually winning it all. So let's get this season underway. Let's do this.
You talk about the Blue Jays, and they filled their rotation now with Daniel Norris and Aaron Sanchez. They could potentially have as many as six rookies on their opening day roster. Where do they line up in the AL East? Are they still a team that has a chance to go out and win it, or do they have too many holes and question marks?
No, I don't think they have holes that cannot be filled at some point during the season. If they discover that this youth movement isn't working, and Lord knows I hope it does work, then they might be in some trouble because they don't have the depth. And we've seen it in the past. They dip down into AAA and pull up 4A players to fill spots, and I hope we don't get to that point. Sometimes you have to because certain players get hurt and you don't have a choice. There aren't many teams out there, let's be honest about this, there aren't many teams in the major leagues, if any, who have all-star caliber players waiting in AAA to be summoned in case of an injury. That's the way the game works. So if there are some holes, and some say the bullpen might not be as strong as it could be, well, I'm sure they'll be addressed. But I'm pretty confident, even though they didn't do it last year, that if the Blue Jays had a lead on the division in late July, but really needed, say, a closer because, you know, Brett Cecil didn't work out, and maybe the job was handed to Miguel Castro, and he's having trouble with it, that they would go out, trade a prospect or two, take on a big salary, and address the need. I'm confident they will do that, despite the fact they didn't do it a year ago. So the team you see on opening day will not be the team you see at the end of July, and likely won't be the team you see as we near the end of September.
Jamie, expanding to the whole AL East, you've said a couple times you don't really see any of the teams with an ace, a bona fide number one starter. Do you see any players emerging this year, young guys or even an older guy like Sabathia bouncing back to a true ace form?
Boy, CC Sabathia had a terrible spring, and you know, something is amiss with him, and I'm not quite sure what it is. There are guys who are capable of being aces. Mm-hmm. Capable. It's not a word I like to throw around. I think Chris Tillman has top of the rotation stuff. He's the number one starter with the Baltimore Orioles. That doesn't mean he's an ace. That doesn't mean he's the guy that ends a four-game losing streak. But his stuff plays. Clay Buchholz, when he's right, has ace potential. So does Rick Porcello, to be honest, with the Boston Red Sox. But that said, there's no Roy Halladay in the division. There's no Cliff Lee when Cliff was at his best. There's no David Price anymore, mm-hmm. You know, because he's moved on to the Tigers and John Lester is in Chicago now. So to me, that means, how well do the five guys who are starting for the Blue Jays play? And you can say what you want about R.A. Dickey and Mark Burley and the fact that one throws a knuckleball and the other one, you know, can't throw anything harder than 88 miles an hour. But the truth is, those guys tend to grind through games and at the end of the season end up with 200, 210 innings. And to me, when you have such a young pitching staff as they do, that's going to be a very, very valuable thing to have when the season comes to an end.
Now, in terms of health for the Toronto Blue Jays, we've seen the team struggle with key injuries down the stretch, start of the season. We've had some freak injuries this year. We've talked about Saunders. We've talked about Pilar, Stroman. If they do get bit by the injury bug again down the stretch, do you see Alex Anthopoulos reaching into the war chest and pulling a big trade to fill a hole? Or do you see him maybe just laying back and going with the youth?
That all depends on where the injuries occur. Mm-hmm. You might remember a few years ago, the talk was that the Blue Jays had so many good pitching prospects, but the problem was all of those prospects were in the lower levels of the minor leagues, okay. Single A, for example. And those names at the time were Noah Syndergaard and Justin Nicolino and Aaron Sanchez and eventually Daniel Norris and Marcus Stroman. Well, those kids are now in the big leagues. So if they cannot perform at the big league level or end up getting hurt, do they have backfill in AAA? At this point, no. There is nobody down there because at this point they're all in the major leagues. They're right. Top pitching prospects as we speak. Norris, Sanchez, Stroman if he hadn't been hurt, Osuna, Castro, they're all in the big leagues. These other kids that are coming, Sean Reed Foley, Jeff Hoffman, kids like that, they're just not ready. They're, in many cases, draft picks from last June's draft and are 4 or 5 years away. So, you know, let's hope that Norris and Sanchez in particular, and to a lesser degree Drew Hutchison, can pitch effectively, stay healthy, and stay in the big leagues for the entirety of the season, because we've been through the process of having Ramon Ortiz come up from AAA and start games for this team. I don't think you want to see it again.
Right.
Definitely out of the whole Ramon Ortiz and Chenming Wong era.
Hey, to take nothing away from those guys, right, because they fill a need. But when you have to utilize your AAA affiliate as much as the Blue Jays have done in recent years, you know you're not going to compete. The teams that ultimately compete are the ones that are able to keep their frontline players on the field. And for some reason, the Blue Jays have not been able to do that. Now, that said, San Francisco Giants won the World Series last year without Matt Cain for the most part. You know, they figured it out. It helped that they had one of the best pitchers in all of baseball starting every fifth day. But that doesn't necessarily work for every team.
Jamie, a team that's sort of been written out in all of this are the Tampa Bay Rays. They seem to always come with young pitching, and they're bound to get Matt Moore back sometime in this season. Are they a team now, with Kevin Cash as the manager, are they a team that have a legitimate shot as well in what appears to be a wide-open AL East?
Well, I said this earlier, and I believe it. I think any of the five have a chance. I'm not totally sold on Tampa Bay because I don't think you can lean on so many young arms. I mean, Jeremy Hellickson's not there anymore. David Price is gone. There's a great deal of inexperience there with Archer and Cobb and Smiley and Matt Moore. And, man, when you're relying so heavily on young arms like that, sometimes they can fall apart, or sometimes they suffer growing pains, or sometimes major league hitters adjust to them and they can't make the adjustment back, which is why it's so valuable, oddly enough, to have people like Mark Burley and R.A. Dickey on your staff, so that when those young players do falter, and let's be reasonable, those veteran players are going to get hit around frequently, but they have staying power that in many cases young players do not. I don't see a veteran on that Tampa Bay staff that's capable of picking up where the young pitchers may falter. And as a fan of the Blue Jays, I don't want to see Tampa Bay succeed. They've lost a lot of incredibly important players, Ben Zobrist among them. And if they're going through a rebuilding phase, I'm thrilled, because we all know that when they're right, and in past years, when their young players have started to shine, they were, in many respects, the best team in the division.
Jamie, speaking about one of the more veteran players in the division now, Alex Rodriguez, making a return for the New York Yankees. A lot of people are trying to figure out, where does he really fit in there now? Obviously, we know Chase Headley is there. Where is he going to get his at-bats? And at this point in his career, does he really make a difference for the Yankees?
We're about to find out. You know, he had a reasonably good spring. My feelings about Alex Rodriguez are, does he deserve a second chance? Sure, because he served the suspension that was handed down to him, and I believe that everybody has a right to have that chance. Was he an immensely talented player for a long time? Yes, he was. That said, I'm not one who likes the New York Yankees, so to me, his position in their lineup and the money that they owe him for the remainder of that contract is their problem. And if it becomes a problem for the Yankees, personally, I'm thrilled, because anything that can take away from what the Yankees are trying to do this year, I'm on board with. For obvious reasons, guys. I mean, let's be frank about that, yep. Right? I'm not going to wave a New York Yankee flag here, and I'm not about to say, boy, I really hope for the best for Alex Rodriguez, because deep down inside, I do not. I mean,
of course,
I'd prefer that that every member of that team falter this year.
So, Jamie, just to switch it up a bit, we've been speaking of the Toronto Blue Jays and the AL East. I just wanted to get your perspective on some of the other divisions in baseball right now and what you thought of, say, for instance, you brought up the San Francisco Giants, and what you think they're gonna, how you think they'll perform this year. I mean, they lose Hunter Pence for about 6 to 8 weeks. We also have the many additions that the Padres made, things like that. I was just interested in what you...
Yeah, that's a fascinating division, because the Padres, for one, had been laying low for so long and not nearly as competitive as the two other teams in the state, for the most part. I mean, for the last several years, that division has really been Dodgers-Giants,
right?
With the Giants getting the upper hand three of the last five World Series. Suddenly the Padres go out and make these incredible changes to their roster. They add James Shields. They trade for Matt Kemp. They acquire Will Myers. I mean, Justin Upton, that's a pretty good outfield. Absolutely. By name. But, you know, one thing we learned 2 years ago, one thing the 2013 Blue Jays taught us is that just because on paper you look good, it doesn't mean you'll perform well. So what the Padres do in that division is to be determined. They've always had good pitching, but in that ballpark, you know, it pays to be a pitcher. So it's not surprising that somebody like Brandon Morrow decided, hey, I'm going to head for San Diego. The Dodgers spend money like it grows on trees, and they want to be competitive. They have a huge market, a huge TV contract. But to this point, they've been a bit of a disappointment, frankly. They're kind of like the American League version of the Detroit Tigers, a team that is constantly among the leaders in payroll, constantly fielding a team of, you know, seemingly all-stars at every position, great pitching staff. Clayton Kershaw's the best pitcher in baseball, hands down. And yet, what good does it do them when they get to the postseason? So I'd be very careful of the San Francisco Giants because of what they've been able to accomplish, because they have the man some might say is the best manager in all of baseball. It's going to be a fascinating division to watch.
That's great. And I guess also something that we were kind of discussing earlier is the, I guess, Giancarlo Stanton. I was just interested in what you thought of his new contract and now the Miami Marlins. Do you think that they can compete this year?
I do. You know, the National League East is an interesting one. The Phillies have basically waved the white flag and said, okay, you know, we're not going to be there at the end of the year by design. The Braves have done that to a degree as well. And so now you're left with the Mets. You're left with the Marlins, who have quite possibly the best young pitcher in the National League, although he's hurt and I guess won't be back until about June, I think. They've got Stanton. They just signed Christian Yelich to a multi-year deal, and right. He's got a lot of upside. You know, I don't know how well this would go over in Toronto if the Marlins won the division. Think about it, with Henderson Alvarez as their opening day starter, and who knows if some of the other young players that were acquired in that deal end up surfacing at the major league level. Hey, is Justin Nicolino even still with the franchise? I think he is, but yeah, he would be. They're talented. They tend to develop extremely well, develop their prospects, and you know they're in a division that seems so flexible, so up and down. There never seems to be one team in that division that takes the reins. And I would say that the Mets are the one team that should be the one that everybody should pick to be the favorites to win the division. But they can't keep these young studs of theirs healthy. I mean, yeah. Matt Harvey comes back, Zach Wheeler goes down. You know, who knows if Syndergaard's going to appear at the big league level this year? I assume he will. A lot of uncertainty in New York, and I think that plays well for the Marlins.
Jamie, I want to just jump over to another NL division here, and in the Central, I might take some flack for this, but I've been doing a lot of reading on the Chicago Cubs. I know that's been a tough stretch in Chicago, but we've talked about upside, and I see some players in this lineup and some of the moves that this Chicago Cubs team has made, and I don't know, I'm interested to hear what you think, but I think they're finally ready to start making a move out of the basement. Yep. And I know that's a tough division, the Central, Cards and the Pirates there, but I think that with adding John Lester and having a guy like Rizzo at first base and Castro at shortstop, I think they're finally ready to make a name for themselves as a good young ball team, and I wonder what you think about that.
And let me go back, because I did fail to mention that the best team in my estimation in the National League is the Washington Nationals. So let's put the talk of the Marlins winning the division aside a second. Washington should win that division handily. I firmly believe that the Marlins will give them a run for their money. But either way, the Cubs are an interesting study at this point, because they have finally decided they're a little fed up with being as uncompetitive as they have been in recent years. They have a great farm system that has produced some incredible prospects. Mm-hmm. That word used loosely. I mean, you're still a prospect until you've accomplished something at the major leagues. Right. And by all accounts, Chris Bryant will be an exceptional major league player at some point. The Angels weren't wrong about Mike Trout. I don't think the Cubs are going to be wrong about this kid, who I might add was originally drafted by the Blue Jays. Mm. Jorge Soler, they've just got some wonderful prospects. Addison Russell, who came over in the Oakland deal.
Yep.
So, as far as the next 10 to 15 years look pretty good.
Yep.
Then you go out and you add John Lester, and suddenly you have a guy at the top of your rotation that you can rely on, and we haven't seen a pitcher of that ilk in Chicago on the north side in many, many years. I've always heard it said that the one thing that holds back the Chicago Cubs is the fact that they play so many day games. And I never took it that seriously. And Greg Zahn brought it up with me. He said, you know, we talked one point years ago about the failings of the Cubs historically and how it's been over 100 years since they won the World Series. And he said to me, that team will never win the World Series until they scale back on how many day games they play and go to a predictable weekend day games,
right?
Weekday night games at home, if that makes any sense to you.
Yep.
And I thought, interesting. He says, because a ball player is all about routine, and it's about, I'm at the ballpark Monday through Friday at such and such an hour, unless we're on the road in a different time zone, and batting practice stretches at this time, batting practice is here, I'm going to go in and look at video here, and blah blah blah. And he said, when you put in a number of day games that sort of sap your energy and mess up your schedule, it can impact the way you play the game.
I thought,
God, that seems so far-fetched, but maybe there's something to that. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe the fact that they play at the lovable Wrigley Field and play as many day games as they do has hurt them long term. But look, you can't argue the lineup's a pretty good one, but I am one who hates predicting anything.
Yep.
No one saw Kansas City doing what they did last year. No one saw the Tampa Bay Rays going all the way to the World Series in 2008. 2 years ago, the Pirates surprised a lot of people, and I don't remember any of the so-called experts saying, oh, don't worry, Pittsburgh will be there at the end. I hate trying to figure out what's going to happen at the end of September, because it's impossible. It's absolutely impossible to predict.
Jamie, you brought up the Cubs and some of the young players that they have. Addison Russell, Javier Baez, Chris Bryant. We saw this week that the Cubs ended up sending Bryant back down to minor league camp. There was a lot of debate about the whole process of saving service time and delaying free agency. In your opinion, is that something that needs to change going forward, or is it something that it's up to the team?
I would say that based on the response of the Players Association, you will probably see them fight for change in that respect come 2016, end of 2016, when the current CBA expires. My opinion is this: that contract was negotiated by the players and the owners, and the owners have a right to do, in this case the owners of the Cubs, have a right to do what they're doing with Chris Bryant and essentially demoting him long enough to gain an additional year of control. I'm all for it if it's right there in the contract. I don't quite understand why the Players Association would be bent on trying to change that rule, because it impacts players who haven't started playing in the big leagues. And if I'm a 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 year guy in the major leagues, do I care ultimately what some kid or what is happening to a kid? In many respects, a prospect who may eventually take my job. Do I care if they stunt his arbitration eligibility? Personally, I would say, no, I don't care. You know, I want what's best for me. I want to get my 10-year pension and blah, 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 blah. I don't give a rat's derriere what happens to Chris Bryant if I'm a 10-year veteran. And I don't know how many veterans think that way. I'd be curious to quiz a few of them. That said, the Cubs are doing what is within their right, and I know Bryant's agent is barking about it, but it happens every time. I think sometimes if this kid's going to be as good as they say he's going to be, you know, at some point in the next 4 or 5 years, aren't they going to offer him some 10-year contract for $400 million and suddenly we'll never remember the fact that they had this little impasse at the beginning of the year? They're trying to buy up an additional year or earn an additional year of control. But you have to think, if this kid is good enough and they want to get him on a long-term contract, eventually it's going to be bought up anyway. So I am on the side of the teams who choose to do this, but I also feel that that Chris Bryant should be playing in the major leagues as of opening day. There are some from the organization who will say they would prefer to bring them up as the season is underway, because asking a rookie to take the field on opening day to make their major league debut can be a lot. I've never been in the position to know what that feels like, so I can't comment, but I've heard some teams justify that move by suggesting that is why they do it.
So, Jamie, we've been talking a lot about young prospects, and we'll get a couple more questions in here, and we'll let you get back to your Tour de France preparation.
To explain, right? I showed up here. I cycled here.
Right.
We were
just going to say you're looking in pretty good shape.
I'm not blood doping, if that's what you're asking.
Okay, that's good to know. That's a disclaimer. That's a Sports from the Six
I simply
exclusive.
Need to ride home.
Okay, good to know. Well, speaking of youth and prospects, the Jays have it up and down the lineup. To switch gears back to the Jays here for a sec, Dalton Pompey, Sanchez, we've talked about, Norris, even guys like Devin Travis. Who do you see making the biggest impact on the team? I'm curious to see who you think, you know, we can talk about talent and potential for days. Who's going to step up to the plate and actually nail their opportunity here with the big club?
Great question. I would respond by saying that the one who should have the greatest impact would be Daniel Norris.
Okay.
And I say that because, you know, from what I have been told and from what I've seen, his upside is greater than that of Aaron Sanchez's. I've had some people say he has greater upside than even Marcus Stroman.
Wow.
And I admire Marcus tremendously as a pitcher. I don't think you would be seeing Daniel Norris as often as we're going to if, obviously, Marcus hadn't been hurt.
Right.
You know. Or then again, maybe you would have, because he did have a very impressive spring. And if Stroman hadn't have been hurt, Sanchez would be in the bullpen, and perhaps Norris is your fifth starter, whatever that, whatever they way that would have worked out. Is it fair to say that we should expect the greatest impact from someone who's going to play every 5 days over someone like Dalton Pompey, who will be in center field every day? Mm-hmm. Probably not, but pitching is so vitally important.
Of course.
And, you know, Dalton's going to have his days of going 0-for-4 and maybe making a misstep or two in center field, and then he's going to come back the next day and go 2-for-3 with a triple and a stolen base and play excellent defensively. Whereas suddenly Norris every 5 days in 2015 becomes critical to the team, as it does with Aaron Sanchez. So I'm belaboring the point. It's hard to pick one of those kids. Really
understandable.
What Daniel does in comparison to what Aaron does is just as important. Mm-hmm. They're both critical components, because we talked about this before. If either one of them fails, if either one of them gets hurt, what are they going to go to?
Right.
You know, who are they going to call up to take that spot?
Yeah, that's fair.
In the rotation. Does Marco Estrada get promoted from the bullpen? Do you dip into the minors and pull up a Liam Hendricks or Randy Wolf or Johan Santana if he's ready? Do you promote Todd Redmond? We've been through this with this team.
Yeah.
The hope is that we don't have to see it. The hope is that they stay healthy. Their innings are monitored, and I know that's loosely defined now, that the club has said, hey, we're not as concerned with innings limits as we used to be, but, man, I would just like to see these kids go out, succeed and fail, but stay healthy, stay in the rotation.
Health for sure, 100%.
And be there at the end of the season and look back and say, man, that was a good year and good enough to keep this team competitive and, Lord knows, good enough to be in a contending position at the end of September. I'm the ultimate, you know, salesman in that respect, because
I can tell.
I would never sit here and say, boy, you know what? What I see is fifth place team, no chance. By the 1st of September, they'll be 25 games out. Never going to come from me, you know. So take that for what it's worth. But I just want to see these kids succeed. I know they have the talent. I know they have it between the years. I've spent enough time with both of the individuals that we're speaking of, Sanchez and Norris, to know that they both care.
Right. Right.
And, hey, this organization has drafted and tried to develop guys in the past that just didn't have the desire. Right. I think that became painfully evident. Deck McGuire might have been one of those guys. David Percy some years ago might have been that person. From what I can tell, they've drafted now pitchers who – you know, who want, they're ultra competitive. Sanchez, just, I mean, to, you know, spend 15 minutes with a kid and you realize he has one purpose right now, and that is to be the best pitcher he possibly can be. Daniel Norris thinks the same way. Drew Hutchison thinks the same way. Stroman's exactly the same way. These are not weak individuals, weak of mind individuals. These are kids. Jeff Hoffman, who they took with the first pick in the draft in June, same way. They all think alike. They all want the same things. They think a lot like Roy Halladay did.
Mm. That's great.
Wow. Uni-focused, concerned about one thing, and that is being the best at their craft. And I'm not at all convinced that in past years they had prospects who thought this way. I think in many respects they had prospects who could throw 95 with ease and got, you know, $2 million signing bonuses and thought, wow, this is kind of cool. I'm a professional ball player. Where do I go from here? These kids seem to know where it is they intend to be in 10 years.
It's exciting to hear.
So, Jamie, I was actually interested because we know now that the new commissioner of baseball, Mr. Manfred, he's going to be taking over, and this is his first year, and he's already started to propose some new changes to the game of baseball. There's the proposed new defensive shift or something like that along those lines, and I was just interested in what you think of the steps he's taking to change what we know of baseball and some of the things that Bud Selig has already implemented.
Yeah, he mentioned the idea of restricting shifts.
Okay.
And I guess drawing up some invisible lines as to where an infielder or outfielder could or could not stand, I don't buy it one bit because the field is designed to be defended, and you can defend it any way you choose to, as far as I'm concerned.
Right.
We see a lot of the shifts happen now, more and more, seemingly every year, to defend against guys like David Ortiz or Mark Teixeira or, you know, in some respects, Jose Bautista, in many respects, Jose Bautista. And I'm fine with that. If that's what you think you need to do to get that player out, then you should be allowed to. There should not be a rule against the way you set your defense.
Right.
Personally. He's talked about other things. He's talked about expansion.
Exactly.
As much as I'd like to see a team back in Canada, and perhaps that would be Montreal, I'm not necessarily favor in doing it through expansion. If another team is out there, and Lord knows, you know, there are messes every single year. It seems Tampa Bay's situation is ever-changing.
Right.
You know, they'd love to see a new stadium in Oakland, blah, blah, blah. Personally, I'd rather see relocation because I am one who thinks that creating too many major league teams creates a watered-down product.
Okay.
I think you see it in the National Hockey League. I mean, there are a lot of players that are making livings in the NHL right now that would have had no business doing so in, say, 1971, but that's change. I get that. So I'd prefer not to see the major leagues expanded, and he's mentioned maybe expanding internationally. But, you know, he's a commissioner who wants to think a little differently than the previous commissioner, and you have to respect him for that. He could also sit up there and say, hey, everything in baseball is right now. We've got, at this point, unity in terms of a collective bargaining agreement. Our players' association and the owners are generally on good terms. We're making more money than we ever made before. you know, the internet has exploded. Our website's doing well. Our MLB network's doing exceedingly well. Ticket sales are up. Regional television contracts are healthy. I'd love for him to say, hey, at this point, stuff remains untouched because everything seems to be working. But he's brought out a few somewhat radical ideas.
That's right.
And it's ruffling the feathers of some traditionalists. And me being over the age of 45, tend to side on tradition. So we'll see. We'll see where it all goes. I'm not exactly sure where it's all going to end up, but it'll be fun to watch from afar.
Jamie, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you before you left.
Uh-oh.
You talked about the state of the game, the state of potential relocation within the MLB, Montreal having a team in the past, of course, the Expos. You're about to go there now for the miniseries between the Reds and the Blue Jays, and you were there last year.
Yes.
For the Mets and the Blue Jays. What have you seen out of Montreal in terms of their passion right now for baseball?
Well, you think about it, last year, a combined, I think, 80,000 people showed up for two exhibition games, two meaningless games between the New York Mets and a team from a different province. This was not an exhibition game between the Montreal Expos and the New York Mets. This was an exhibition game between the Toronto Blue Jays and the New York Mets in Montreal. That tells you a lot right there, right? Now, as we know, the Expos haven't existed for, what, 12 years now. So it's impossible to have them play in those exhibition games. My point is, all those people showed up to see a ball game that meant nothing, that didn't involve a local team. That's my point. Who were those people? Did they jump on the train or drive en masse on Friday morning to get to Montreal to go to those games? As far as I could tell, no. How did I come to this theory? Well, both days, Friday and Saturday, I was wandering around the concourse of Olympic Stadium in full uniform, meaning suit and tie, you know, nicely dressed shoes, that kind of thing. In other words, the stuff I would wear on air. And I don't remember a single person stopping me in the concourse at Olympic Stadium to talk about baseball. My take is, they had no idea who I was. That tells me that the majority of the people that were going to those games were from Montreal, and in many respects, Francophone, who don't watch English television. right? If all those people had come down from Toronto to fill those seats to see their beloved Blue Jays, then I figure more people would have said, hey, Jamie, how do you think the team's going to do? Or blah, 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 what do you think of this? What do you think of that? Nobody said a word to me. So to me, they were people who are from the Montreal area, love baseball, love the Expos, not the Blue Jays, and had an opportunity to go to their stadium and see a major league game, exhibition games, though they were. That told me a lot. I'm not speaking from a bruised ego here. I'm not saying, boy, nobody reckoned. That's not the point. The point is, I thought it was cool that nobody had a clue who I was. And if you watch enough Blue Jays baseball over the course of the summer, you might recognize me from time to time. And I think the audience at these games wasn't filled with people driving from the Golden Horseshoe. I think they were 2 days filled with people from Quebec who love the game. And that, to me, that's encouraging. Because let's be honest, if you're going to bring a team back to Montreal, you're not going to rely on people to drive from southern Ontario to buy those tickets. Right. You need the local audience.
Yeah. 100%.
And I think that's what we saw last year, and I hope we see it again this time around.
Now, Jamie, just before we let you go, one last question. Tonight at 9:30, we have our very esteemed Centennial Sports Journalism Fantasy Draft for baseball. I don't know what kind of restriction Rogers Sportsnet puts on your availability for fantasy sports, but we are at an uneven number, mm-hmm. and we're going head-to-head, and we need a filler. Are you in? I don't know what kind of financial restrictions you're on right now.
Financial restrictions.
Well, there may or may not be a bounty for first place. We don't know.
Well, I'll beg out. I have two kids and a wife who want to monopolize my time before I leave for Montreal.
That's fair.
I appreciate the invitation, though.
We had to extend the invitation, and thank you very much for your time. We appreciate it very much.
This has been enjoyable. Thank you.
Thanks, Jamie.